The Education, Finance, and Economic Competitiveness Division will now come to order. Members, in your packet are the minutes for March 28th. Representative Brown?
I move the minutes.
Representative Brown moves adoption of the minutes of March 28th as printed. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is adopted. Today we have something that on our agenda that has been in the works for years and years. Today we have a bill, House File 6, before us that lets us take steps into the future. And the people that have worked on this bill in K-12 division deserve high compliments of all of us. And we deserve high compliments for establishing the priorities of spending and transmitting that to them. And we should thank them for listening, because indeed they did. And so, let's get on with it. Representative Greiling, Representative Mariani, welcome to this committee. Please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And first of all, before we start, we would like to thank a few people and recognize many people who helped us work on this wonderful bill. And the first person...
We will hold our applause.
All right.
Till the end.
And then we'll take all the applause we can get. The first person to thank profusely, in case everyone isn't aware, is Madam Chair herself, who was our lead champion in getting our target. And so I know she doesn't like thanks, but we definitely thank her. Also, we want to thank the staff, who, of course, all of us know that we would not be anywhere as legislators without them. And so to our right, we have Mr. Strom and Mr. Crow from the House staff and from the House research staff. And then behind me is Shannon Patrick, the committee administrator for K-12. And not down here yet, I don't think, is Liz Mandelman, our legislative assistant. And also on education finance, our lead Republican, Representative Bud Heidgerken, who has worked cooperatively with our committee all along with his team, of which of the K-12 members, there aren't a lot actually on this committee that are present, but I see Representative Brown and Representative Rockwell. Are those all the members of our committee that are on this committee?
There's a committee going on too.
Representative Erickson is behind us, and so all of us worked, I think, very well together to come up with this bill, and I know that Representative Mariani as well has people to thank before we present the bill.
Thank you,
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Greiling. And I too want to extend my appreciation to you, Chairwoman Murphy. You are a very good collaborator, behind-the-scenes type of person who just gets things done, and we appreciate all the work and the hours and the time that you put into developing good policy here in Minnesota. I want to acknowledge, obviously, our committee. There's a big chunk of the of our work in the policy bill is resides inside this bill. But I want to thank, obviously, our members from our committee, some who are on this committee as well, and our lead, particularly our lead Republican member, Representative Erickson. I think we've had very good good vetting, good discussion in our committees, really a good give and take. I want to thank and acknowledge our committee administrator, Ms. Christina Gossett, who without would not have been able to have gotten this far with this bill. So Lisa is behind the scenes, folks, to make things happen. My LA, Celeste Marin, our House research person, Ms. Lisa Larson, who really is just a fountain of wisdom and good advice for both sides of the aisle here. And I also want to acknowledge the good work of Brad Kelly and our DFL research and Carmen Carter and our GOP research. It takes a lot of folks to put together good bills. We had a lot of good folks working on this one, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much. Now. And before we get off of that, I'd also like to thank the advocates that are here that have been here right along and dogging our tracks and stopping us in the halls and leaving us notes and setting up appointments and all that they do, because they are important to the process also. Please begin your summary and your introduction or presentation of House File 6.
Madam Chair, I'm going to start and talk in general and more about the finance parts, and then Rep. Mariani will talk in general and more about the policy parts. But our first assignment that our chair has given us was to take a look way back in January when we went through what were our top priorities and then rate ourselves if we met those top priorities. And we are proud to say that our two committees met all of our top priorities. One of them was quality education for every student across the state, and that is generally met with the 3% and 3% increase on the formula that just goes across all the students across the state. We were going to address the achievement gap, the learning disparities, and as you listen to our presentation, you'll see that there's many, many facets of this bill that do that, including the gifted and talented funding, because we don't want to address the achievement gap by not having the top students continue to progress along with the students in the middle and the students at the lower end of the learning disparities. We wanted to talk about special education and the funding gap and how that relates to the learning disparities, and that is definitely funded, well funded in this bill. We had the goal of property tax relief, and thanks to Representative Brown and the others who aren't here on the committee chaired by Representative Marquardt, and there might be others on this committee that are in Representative Mariani's committee that are on that group, I'm not sure. But anyway, they did a good job and a fair job of putting property tax relief into this bill. And then we talked about key programs that we wanted to include that we listed in January, and they're all included, and I'll read off the ones that were on the report that I gave for the committees in January. World language, gifted and talented, college in the schools, advanced placement, libraries, technology, after school program, summer school, and then I said, and a lot more. And there's definitely a lot more in this bill. We're looking also at, because this committee wants to look at how we transcend the early childhood years into K-12 and how we go on to higher ed, we have some reading literacy programs in this bill, WordsWork and the Minnesota Reading Corps, that work with Head Start students to make sure they're ready to go to school. Then we have the all-day kindergarten to reinforce that learning that takes place before the students get to school. And we have extended time for the summer school, the after school, the area learning center, so that students that need extra time on task to catch up can have that chance through this increased funding. We have limited English proficiency in this bill, where we took off the cap that normally limits students to 5 years, because we know that some students need more than that time. We took out the concentration factor in that formula, though, to make sure that that funding spread out through all around the state, because we want a geographical balance in this bill, and there are students who do not speak English in other areas besides just Minneapolis and St. Paul. They have a lot, and they have more, but most of our districts need this funding at this time. So we thought that was a fair way to do that. The gifted and talented, we do have in the bill for older kids through advanced placement, international baccalaureate, and college in the schools. But we also added an extra amount of money onto the funding for gifted and talented. It used to be $9, and now it's moved up to $13 per pupil. And that is funding that keeps everybody challenged. Research shows it's good for all kids, not just the gifted and talented labeled students. We have other general changes in the bill that deal with regional fairness. We have the library funding that's here that's also for achievement gap. Yes, that's here. Love that. There is a huge increase for libraries in the bill, and I did meet with library people. Many of you probably did. Yesterday, we had those buttons on, and they are thrilled with the funding in this bill, that they haven't seen this kind of funding since before I was in the legislature. And that is funding that we're very, very proud of. We do have, and some of the, a lot of that funding is more geared to the greater Minnesota rural areas. But we do have in the bill, to balance it out, the Location Equity Index, which is just a tiny little beginning of funding equity for the metro area, and particularly the ones that don't get the need-based funding, but it goes to all metro area districts. But we do have, through the property tax in this bill, referendum equity and debt equity, which more benefits the outer ring suburbs and greater Minnesota, especially the debt service equity funding. And we have reform in the bill that many parts of reform, but we won't go through all of it, but I just want to say the special ed funding is definitely tied to reform of special education, because we know that's a growing area of the budget. We have in the bill, based on the tour that we took to represent Falls District, prevention for students even getting into special ed with reading and literacy intervention, and they are taking their very good model that they've done research on and then training other master teachers in other districts so that good work can be spread around the state in other people's districts. And then through the task force that Representative Hillstrom's bill created, we will be looking at all the areas where special ed exceeds federal mandates and make sure they're all needed and that they're prevention oriented. And we think that with those reforms, we can long-term not just pay the special ed bill, but also cut down on students going into special ed and making sure that everything that we're doing there works and is the best use of our dollars. We have technology. That funding is one-time funding, but we believe that will help schools. There's a task force to make some sense of what would be the best practices, and then districts will get $30 per pupil, significant money, although it's one time, to make those purchases and get the infrastructure in place so that they can have equitable opportunities for students all over the state, not just in the districts that presented things like interactive whiteboards to our committee. We have, for the achievement gap, we have a teacher of color loan forgiveness program, the collaborative urban educator. We did not take the full governor proposal for the high school, but we do have a large component in this bill called the 21st Century High Schools that take what we thought were some of the very best ideas from that bill, such as AP, IB, College in the Schools, and career and technical funding to have the transition at the other end of the spectrum, going from K-12 into higher ed. And then just two other things I will mention before I turn it over to Representative Mariani. We do have an increase for school lunch programs, which is our duty to make sure that at least the schools have enough funding to have nutritious food for our students. We want them to have those good eating habits and for lifelong eating habits. And then we have a part that Representative Tilbury has had a big hand in, added to the safe school levy, is permanent funding for school support staff, counselors, social workers, nurses, psychologists, and chemical dependency staff for safer schools and more prevention and preventing suicide and the like. Those are some highlights of our bill. There are many, many other components in here that we could talk about as well, but I think in the interest of time, and maybe there will be some questions, Madam Chair and members, I will turn it over to Rep. Mariani, who has been such a wonderful partner to work with in education issues, and he brings such a wealth of knowledge from not just his personal life, but also his professional life away from the legislature.
Thank you very much. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll try to be brief, but Representative Grayling covered a number of the areas I want to highlight, and of course the bill is intermeshed that way. Our committee, like this committee and Representative Grayling's committee, spent our first sessions together talking about what our expectations would be for this legislative session. As you can imagine, given the talent around the room and the passion, there were a lot of expectations, a lot of big expectations. Some of those, just to clump them for some of the policy provisions here, have to do with enhancing rigor in our schools and doing so in a way that really continues to drive our schools to be world-class places of learning. And so really matching up with the emerging global realities of nowadays. A strong interest in strong accountability, not just spending money on good programs, but trying to do that in a way where we're expecting clear and strong accountability actions. Of course, addressing the achievement gap issue in our state, which is very real. Madam Chair, with I think maybe half of my of our committee members either being current teachers or having been teachers, it was a very strong desire to do good policy and investments to enhance the professional level of our teaching corps in Minnesota. So there's a strong emphasis on teacher professional development work, and then of course innovation in any way that we find it would be another main area. In rigor world-class schools, Representative Growley spoke about our APIB efforts. We're really matching up in many ways with the governor here, trying to grow opportunities for more greater access around the state to these programs, as well as adding college in the schools, a concurrent enrollment, creating more access for that. A big initiative, very bipartisan. We put together Representative Bond, Representative Paulson bill on world languages, basically getting us moving toward eventually establishing state standards and assessments. We established pilot programs for world languages in the bill. And I'm really excited about this. We recognize the language assets that we already have within our student body in Minnesota. And so we're directing the department to create a certification program that acknowledges that acknowledges the multilingual capacity that we have already in our student body. In the accountability area, we're refunding the Office of Educational Accountability. We think that the legislature needs an independent research-based evaluation group that can evaluate how we're doing in reporting student and school success, including moving beyond the NCLB AYP framework, which after all is largely about measuring our failures, and adding to it in terms of looking at student growth and value-added assessments to be able to tell a fuller story of what's happening in our schools so we can also measure success in Minnesota. Representative Ansells brought a very good bill that he worked awfully hard to bringing people together to compromise around online learning so that we can create greater accountability in online learning opportunities. We also have a rulemaking authority for the department to be able to look at those providers who are providing supplemental education services. Currently, we're not measuring how effective they are. We want them measured, and if they're not helping to raise student achievement, then we want to be able to not remove their approval for being providers. The achievement gap issues, the first thing is really about rigor. All the things we talked about rigor is about addressing the achievement gap. We do have the H3 to K3 literacy programs, Representative Valley spoke about, as well as the Teacher Color Scholarship Program, because we feel very strongly that we need that kind of role modeling of diversity among our teaching corps in our classrooms as motivation for many of our kids of color. Teacher professional development, we lined up to some degree with the governor on his STEM initiatives. We have enhanced math and science training opportunities. We also have enhanced training opportunities for financial literacy, for technology use in the classroom, and a funding stream for National Board Professional Teacher Certification. We want to encourage more of our Minnesota teachers to pursue that high-quality certification. In innovation, we're establishing an alternative school calendar pilot program. Lipson Valley talked about continuing to push in the gifted and talented field, where we're directing our districts to develop policies for the acceleration of gifted and talented students' academic success. We have a number of the governor's housekeeping provisions here, most notably rulemaking that will allow us to align our reading, math, and writing tests with the new MCA2s. There are some other important provisions in this bill. I won't be exhaustive. I'll just list three very quickly. One, we do have the responsible sexuality education provision, Representative Walker's bill, which directs all school districts to develop these opportunities for education in this area and for learning with an emphasis on parent and community involvement. We also established the physical ed and health state standards and graduation credit requirements. This is Representative Ward's effort. Oh, I'm sorry, we don't have health. Okay, I need to update my notes here. And then finally, Madam Chair, we direct all districts to establish a parent and family involvement policy. There are a number of other provisions here, but it would take us a lot longer to go through all of them. I'm really proud to be associated with this bill. It's a good, balanced bill. It's good policy. It takes care of our base, not just financially, but in terms of how we do our work, as well as really bravely leads us into a future in Minnesota where our students could be maximum competitive in our national and world economy. So, Madam Chair, members, that's our bill.
Sounds good. Let's go forth. Representative Grayling, Representative Mariani moves adoption of the division report for House File 6. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion is adopted. At the end of the meeting, I will renew the following motion. The chair moves that House File 6, First Committee Engrossed, be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to Finance Committee. We will go on until the bill is completed, the discussion is completed, and the amendments are completed, and we will not come back for this bill till tomorrow. Tomorrow we do higher ed. Then hopefully we'll have the higher ed bill available to you before you leave this afternoon. But if not, it will be delivered. Is there any discussion on House File 6? Or any questions on the presentation by Representative Dreiling and Representative Mariani? Representative Heigerken.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Grayling, and I had some concerns, and I want to thank you for doing the career and tech bill. Mm-hmm. And when I was going through the numbers, the spreadsheets, I couldn't find the funding for it, but I did check, and I want to thank you. For those of you that are looking for it, it's in the 21st century, so the money's out there. Thank you. Just so some of you, I know it's very important to all of you, those that funding for that part. So.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Grayling, I'm going to ask the same question Representative Pulaski asked yesterday. If the governor is not willing to increase taxes, what's Plan B for this bill?
And Representative Erickson, I would give the same answer that that our chair gave yesterday to Representative Pulaski's question, and that is that there isn't a contingency at the moment. We're just going to work really hard to get all the people of Minnesota who have been contacting us, group after group after group, including the group whose button I have on today, the librarians yesterday, and actually every group I've talked to who strongly supports this. I think if they fan out across the state and talk to legislators, talk to the governor, I'm hopeful that we can actually pass this bill as it is. I would not want to be in the position of figuring out what to cut from it.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Murphy. Representative Greiling, how much does your bill exceed the governor's proposal, and how much of a tax increase would we need to fulfill that increase?
Madam Mayor.
Representative Greiling.
Representative Erickson, about $200 million that this exceeds the governor's proposal, so it's not a lot in the grand scheme of things, but this is different. And this, as you know, the income tax increase that our caucus has proposed is all to go to property tax relief. So there is significant property tax relief in this bill. I think it's about $125 million. And so that would be in jeopardy should he veto that bill, because that is property tax relief. And, you know, I would think that would be a shame. But the rest of this bill is not contingent upon the income tax increase. It is for the foreign operating corporation loopholes being closed, companies that aren't following Minnesota rules. If they could be clamped down upon, we would then have more money for this bill. And also tax compliance, tax dodgers who aren't paying their bills. The tax committee is planning on the extra funding for this bill beyond the property tax relief, for which the income tax on the very, very high wage earners in the fourth tier, compared to the bill that I proposed that was more balanced across wage earners, that is for the property tax relief in this bill.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is just my last question. So you use all of the surplus, correct? I mean, as much as the governor used, and then you're relying on those other provisions, and then the property tax relief would occur because of the top-tier new rate. Is that correct?
Well, Representative Erickson, I think you should talk to Representative Solberg and Representative Carlson about, you know, what they put for the contingency funds, because I know they didn't just bleed those dry. Those are, I think, more well-funded than what the governor did, actually. But I'm not here today to talk about the Ways and Means budget. But we did use the one-time money out of the extra one-time billion for the technology money and a couple of other things in this bill, the library merger and such. But the money that we used for inflationary increases did come out of that other inflationary half.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Is there any other discussion? Looks like it's amendment time, Representative Bradley.
Wicked soldiers.
Representative Bradley, do you have any amendments?
Madam Chair, I do not.
Okay. Then I have before me A50. Representative Hegerton.
Madam Chair, thank you, and that's a clarification. It passed, and it we need to rewrite the needs to be put in the right statute. Mr. Larson would explain what happened.
Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, members, Representative Hegerton is correct. This just is a little bit of cleanup. I think Representative Hegerton was interested in having teachers, school districts, others have the ability to find the provision easily. So we've recoded it, and essentially it's the substance of what passed before the Finance Committee.
Thank you. Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, members, that's correct. We took action on this the last time the bill was before us. And before I say anything else, Ms. Larson, you were out of the room when I thanked you for the work that you did for us this year. And as usual, you did terrific quality work. Thank you so much for your work. Members, this is a good amendment. I would urge your support.
Is there any further discussion? If not, Representative Heidkirchen renews his motion for adoption of House of A50, Amendment A50. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion is adopted.
You?
Yep. Representative Hornstein, A51.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. The A51 amendment is a very scaled-down version of a bill that was heard that I introduced in the policy committee related to class sizes. I had some bipartisan ribbing from the teachers on that committee after I presented the bill, saying, you don't have to talk to teachers about class size, and I don't think I have to talk to parents or administrators or others as well. The issue with the bill in its entirety is that there was a fairly large fiscal note because it called for a pretty extensive study by the department. So what I've done instead, I think it's very important for us in this bill to at least go on record as acknowledging that this is an issue and a challenge for our schools, is to simply insert student-teacher ratios into the report cards that are already done by the department. And, Madam Chair, I did want to offer a brief oral amendment to this amendment, if that's appropriate at this time.
Please do it.
Okay. Members, after student-teacher ratios, add that clearly indicate the definition of teacher for purposes of determining these ratios. Again, that clearly indicate the definition of teacher for purposes of determining these ratios. And again, that's because this has been somewhat of a moving target. We've had debates about support staff and others, and I just wanted that to be clearer in the legislation. If people have questions about the wording of that, Ms. Larson assisted with that and could assist. So I'd like to have to move that oral amendment to the amendment.
That's more words than the First Amendment, Representative.
I was very proud that this amendment was so short, but of course that didn't matter.
Okay, one more time. After the comma.
That clearly indicate the definition of teacher for purposes of determining these ratios.
Any comment?
Madam Chair.
Yeah. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I urge your support of the amendment. I actually had a little bit of difficulty prior to the verbal or oral language here because, without that language, it's possible that we can define teacher any way here. And actually, we still can. This is a direction to the commissioner, and this is part of the report card. Inputs that the commissioner is expected to report back. But as opposed to getting into a long process of prescribing what that is, we thought let's at least have the commissioner then clearly tell us, so how are you defining these individuals in the classrooms for the sake of developing these ratios. Representative Hornstein did have a much longer bill. It's a good bill. It did create some funding issues, as well as I think needed some more vetting because of the, some of the prescriptive nature of this bill. But I think this responds, to a little bit of the angst that we see out in the public, where people really do want to know, what's happening with our student-teacher ratios and what the impact of that is on the quality of instruction and academic outcomes. So I would urge your support at this moment, at this time.
Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just help me understand, is there any financial aspect to this at all, or is this just a...
Representative Hornstein.
Madam Chair, Representative Eastland, my understanding is that this is something that's done already, and... There should be minimal, if not none or minimal, impact to this. And Madam Chair, Representatives, and that was really one of my goals, is that, as Representative Mariani said, the original bill did have a pretty hefty fiscal note, and we just weren't able to do that at this time.
Representative Zimmer?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. To Representative Hornstein, that was part of my question. I guess, you know, earlier in the bill, we're taking out identified 4 to 6 designations applicable and applicable to high and low performing schools, and now we're putting in student teacher ratios. I'm wondering what that's going to look like and what would be. Do we have to redesign the cards or redesign the report cards? Is there a component that's like, and maybe we already are, so it's not an issue, but do we know that for sure?
Representative Hornstein?
Madam Chair, Representative Demmer, I guess I'd defer maybe to Ms. Larson on that. I'm not exactly sure how, you know, this is new, and you know if it's a copy editing issue or how that would work. There was a question about how this would actually look. If I could paraphrase, and Representative Demmer, maybe you could correct me if I'm not, how this would actually look in terms of the presentation of the report card. Is there impacts fiscal and otherwise, and we took out some language. Are we substituting this for something else that's in the report card already? Did I summarize that okay?
Madam Chair, I think you got it right on, but I think maybe that's probably a question for the department. They're the ones that put this, they're the ones being asked to put this together. And again, I don't know if there's somebody here that could speak to that. I don't know if we have a template that would have to be changed, or if this is just we do a different report each time and it's no big thing.
I think we probably should clarify that as it goes on its way. Representative Erickson?
Thank you, Chair Murphy. Well, it will be a mandate for school districts to report differently from what they report now, because there is a student ratio on the school report card. Now there will be one that will entail gathering more information. So, you know, I don't know if school districts appreciate this kind of demand. They have been telling us they don't want these mandates, but I'm not saying it's unfunded. I'm just saying they're going to have to submit information much different from what they already do, because they count their ratios, as I heard Representative Hornstein say earlier, counting maybe paras, or, you know, they could be including some of those in there. So,
thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you. And just to respond, I know that Madam Chair, Representative Erickson was just making a comment, an observation, expressing a concern. Apparently, staff characteristics are already included, so there would be some change, but I don't think it would be a substantive, hugely substantive mandate or anything onerous, because there are already some requirements in terms of reporting that.
Representative Heikerkin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I like your amendment, Representative Hornstein. It's exactly what I did with the transportation bill, accountability. I don't know what the state owns property. Doing the same thing here. I like the amendment. Thank you.
Representative Hornstein, maybe I'm mixed up, but I don't know if it's on the oral amendment or not, but is this the student's report card? Are we talking about the, or are we talking about the state report card on the school?
It's
issued by the department.
The school performance.
Okay. Then I wasn't mixed up. But I lost something there. Okay. Any further discussion on the oral amendment? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is adopted. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you. Oh, okay. I'd like to move the entire amendment then.
Representative Hornstein moves adoption of A51 as amended. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're so welcome. I will be more helpful the next time. Representative Eastland, A52.
I'm
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is reason for this amendment was an issue that was brought to me by a student from my district who went to St. Cloud State, I believe it was, and in her process of becoming a teacher, she took the praxis tests each year. She took a praxis test. After her sophomore, freshman year, she took the math praxis, and then she took the writing and so on. And when she got to the point this last year where she graduated and applied for a license, she was told that her passing score that she got for the math praxis 4 years earlier no longer counted because they had changed the passing score. And what this amendment does is just simply says if you take the praxis test and you pass it, that it will be good enough when you apply for your license. You won't have to retake it if they change the score.
Representative Eastland, she planned ahead, right?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Good quality. Representative Erickson?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, but I would speak in opposition to this amendment, my dear friend, Representative Eastland. I served on the Board of Teaching, and I know that Minnesota has had the lowest cut scores, and unfortunately, this gal got caught in the transition. But, you know, the colleges are notified well enough ahead of time that there's going to be a change in the cut score for the praxis. These are minimal test scores. They have the responsibility to tell their teacher candidates that these scores will change. So if this passing score does not meet the new requirement, it is not the Board of Teaching that's at fault. It is the School of Education that should have told the candidate that this was going to occur. This is a major policy change, and you know, I think we're micromanaging the Board of Teaching in regard to our asking them to increase the rigor of our teacher candidates to ensure that the cut scores of Minnesota are not the lowest that they have been, because the cut score at the time that this gal took this test was equal to that of Alabama. It was the lowest there was. And, you know, with that said, and you can tell Madam Chair that, you know, I am concerned about this, even though I feel for this teacher candidate for whom Representative Eastland is speaking. It wouldn't affect her anymore, but I think going forth, we really want to hold the highest standard we can on our praxis tests, and the colleges of education have the obligation to tell the candidates of those impending changes so that they don't take their tests and then find out a few weeks later that, whoops, the test score now has changed and I'm caught in between. You know, and that was all done, and this was unfortunate. They set the policy and they couldn't change it.
So we should flunk St. Cloud College? I don't know. I respect your passion and your what you've just said about that. But I think back to that earlier day that we took that practice test in here on the math. And I think if she passed that score once, I don't know if she, 4 years later, she could have to go through it all over again.
Madam Chair.
Representative Erickson?
Madam Chair, I think the test you're referring to was the NCA2s.
But it was a test, nevertheless, that was placed before us that 11th graders in high school have to take. And there were only 5 questions on it, but I know I didn't get all 5 right.
Madam Chair, I've looked at the practice tests, and they're not that difficult.
Representative Heigergen.
I just agree with you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Comments? Representative Mariani?
Madam Chair, I agree with you as well. I think we should adopt this amendment.
All in favor of adoption?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion is adopted, Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative.
Madam Chair? Madam Chair?
Representative Krenz?
I'm just wondering if Representative Garofalo is keeping score today.
Representative Garofalo has a cold.
Yeah. Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Krenz, I'm highly medicated today. I want to talk to him.
Madam Chair, no wonder it was so quiet today. Thank you.
A53, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This amendment addresses the part of the QCOMP program that requires 60%
of a compensation increase to be based on teacher performance. And the amendment clarifies that we're only talking about 60% of the QComp funding and not the total increase each year from the date of the QComp agreement was signed. And if we don't make this law clear, teachers in the future will not participate in the program, at least in the way that the Department of Education is interpreting the law is not what teachers believe is contained in QComp. And so this is a very simple amendment that will help clarify the language.
And you move?
And I move the amendment.
Thank you. Comment? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now, I was on the conference committee, and I know that Senator Dietrich noted the other day that she was also on the conference committee, but the language here, as stated on line 1.17, is what we negotiated. Before the steps and lane salary schedule, we did not talk about the Dietrich idea at all. The amendment that Representative Peterson is offering here is I think, something we should not deal with, primarily because of the lawsuit, but secondly because the intent of this original legislation is exactly as it reads here, and it does not in any way suggest that funding is to come out of the alternative compensation revenue. That is, you know, what we're doing here is stepping into the arena of homegrown teacher performance pay. When I say homegrown, I think of St. Francis, who was one of the leaders in this. Those teachers got together and they said, we want to do something differently. We want to do something different from steps and lanes. And you know, we listened to that, and we already had, you know, some other plans out there, some other homegrown ideas. Plus, we had the program coming out of the nation's capital. The TAP is that what it's called, Ms. Larson? What's the program that?
Yes.
Larson.
Well, she's just helping me out here. But you know, this would be such a deviation, Madam Chair, from the intent of those negotiations that we had in setting up our performance pay, our alternative teacher performance pay system here, that I'm wondering, is there someone from the department here who can comment on that?
We're having committee testimony today.
Yeah. Well, Madam Chair, this is a huge change, and I think we need to have someone from the department speak to this.
We're having committee discussion today, Representative Erickson.
Well, Madam Chair, what if the commissioner shows up? Are we not going to allow her to speak?
I don't see the commissioner. Representative Kranz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I can only speak to this. I mean, I wasn't involved in that conference committee, but as an educator and union leader and negotiator, I know that in our district, we interpreted the actions of the legislature in the past in this area to be the 60% of that was the funding that was in that area. And so I believe that this referendum clarifies that. And I think there are some school districts that are being misled by various areas in their interpretation of this. And I almost want to urge us to pass this so that we don't get litigation on the other side. So I think this is necessary, and I'm thankful that Representative Peterson brought it forward.
Representative Peterson.
I would also say that the legislature made the language in the first place, and I think they need to clarify it because there are inconsistencies and a great deal of discussion among teachers and among locals of what they can do, and we need as a legislature to clarify what they can do, and this is very credible, and it is certainly being implemented this way in many districts. So I would leave I would certainly support this amendment.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I think we have to wait for the courts to make this decision. This is a lawsuit that is pending. This is Education Minnesota suing the state of Minnesota over this very clause to a certain extent. And we, you know, I think we have to wait. And In fact, maybe the commissioner can't even comment on this. I don't know.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, the legislature determined this language, and we need to clarify it, not the courts. It's not up to courts to determine what we want. This is up to us to determine what this language should say.
Representative Dimmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, as I read this, you know, if you go back to the top in Subdivision 2, we're amending item number 3 under item B, which is part of Subdivision 2. This is talking about an alternative pay system that would be implemented by a school district, or that would be proposed by a school district as they apply for QCOMP funds. If they don't qualify or decide not to, you know, if the school district decides not to go ahead and proceed with application, or if they do proceed with application and are turned down, this wouldn't come into play. If it does come into play, and if they are accepted, they would have, by definition of getting QCOMP monies, an alternative pay system. And what this says is that in that alternative pay system, you don't go backwards from your previous pay system, but any increases going forward would be 60% based on teacher performance. Now my question is, as we go forward doing that, we're assuming that the 60% is all being funded by the alternative QCOMP revenues. Well, what if the increase is more than what the QCOMP revenues were? How are we going to break apart 60% of the funding that came from QCOMP dollars versus the 60% of funding that came from, say, the general fund? How do we determine where those QCOMP dollars went in the salary schedule? Did they go on salary? Did the QCOMP dollars go toward benefits? And which dollars of revenue from the state are we going to attribute to compensation? Because we're saying 60% of the compensation that's funded by alternative revenue. Who determines when you've got alternative revenue, when you've got you know, operating levy revenue, when you've got other revenue coming in from, for say, special ed? How do we break down which of those revenues are paying for the salary increase so you know what to do the 60% on? I think this adds a lot of complexity, Madam Chair and members. I'm not if I'm for or against it. I don't think it really matters. I think we just, if we're going to divide up the buckets of money going to schools and try to figure out how much of it's going to pay teacher salary, we've got a real problem. And how do we get school districts to figure that all out?
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. They've been able to do it for the past few years and do it well, and I think that they'll be able to do it in the future.
Well, Madam Chair.
Representative Dimmer.
Representative Peterson, and I don't think by doing it, I mean they say that this much of the salary for teachers comes from the operating levy, and this much of the salary increase for teachers comes from the general fund, and this much of the teacher increase comes from special ed funding. They're doing that now, Representative Peterson, is that what you're saying? Because that's what we're asking them to do here, is break apart which fund different parts of the salary schedule is coming from. I don't see how they can do that.
Representative Wardlow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just, you know, my district just got approved for QCOMP, and I don't want them to back out because they're really under the assumption, it's my understanding, that the 60% was based from QCOMP money going forward, and without this amendment, from the day you start applying, and once you get accepted, if it takes a year, year and a half to get accepted or your program approved, then any increase you get throughout that previous year and forward, they take 60% is based on the performance. In my district, if I'm not mistaken, thinks that 60% starts applying from the day they get approved and implement the program. And I think Reverend Demers' argument sort of supports the amendment because you were talking about what part of the money goes towards QCOMP basically, and it'd be the 60% going forward from approval or from activation of the program. That's how I see it. And I know that in areas where QCOMP or TAP has been done, even I was told by a representative that scores went up, performance went up, teachers were doing a better job in the classroom, because of the TAP or the QCOM program. I don't want my district to lose out on that, and I'm fearful that without this amendment, my district might back out and not do the program, and our kids would miss out.
Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm thinking. I guess if I was a school district, probably what I would do then is I would designate that all of the alternative compensation revenue, the QComp revenue, is going in the salary schedule, and then you could do it all on 60%. That's what I would probably do as a school district, and maybe that's not a problem. They would just have to designate that and say that's what it is, Madam Chair. So I just think it's difficult when you have different monies coming into a school district that go into the general fund. How do you divvy up which of those dollars are going toward the light and which of those dollars are going toward heat and which of those dollars are going toward salaries? And, you know, maybe they can do that. I just think it's interesting, and I think it might involve some complexity, Madam Chair. So I won't be supporting it.
Isn't that part of the plan, Representative Peterson?
Yes.
Madam Chair, yes, it is. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then Representative Peterson, you know, is it 40% for reform then, or how does this shake out?
Well, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Erickson. My amendment says that it will be 60% of the compensation increase for alternative compensation revenue. Would you repeat your question?
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Peterson, I'm looking at the words that precede your new insertion, mm-hmm. which reads at least 60% of any compensation increase funded by alternative compensation revenue.
Right.
Because you have to look at this thing as an entire clause, not just in parts.
Well, I think it says at least 60%. You could use the whole 100% if you wanted. But it says at least 60%.
Correct. So there's the reform, Madam Chair, and Representative Peterson.
Where
the reform of the steps in length.
Representative Erickson. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Erickson, that is different in each of those negotiated plans. The plans are negotiated between the school district and the bargaining unit, and they're approved by each of those bodies. And each of those plans look different. St. Francis will look different from Egan. And they all will look different in terms of how they put their plans together and how they sort out that money, how they use some of the money for training, some of it will be for the 60%, you know, performance. They will all put those plans together and utilize the money in different ways. And I think that's the beauty of the plan, because it is creative and it meets the needs of the teachers and the staff and the school boards in each of those districts.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think the Commissioner is here now, and I don't know, you know, if we would honor her presence and ask her to what extent she can comment on this, but she was a legislator at the time, Madam Chair. She was not the Commissioner, so she knows the intent of this clause, and I would respectfully request that we ask her to comment to the extent she can.
I appreciate that very much, Representative Erickson. I will call on Commissioner as I would on the governor if he walked in here. But I think I would like all the committee members to have their opportunity to ask Representative Peterson questions first. Any further discussion?
Hey, Madam Chair, one more.
Representative Kranz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the amendment and to Representative Peterson, I think the key word that we're maybe glossing over is reform. It doesn't mean abolish step and lane. It doesn't mean remove step and lane. It means reform, and it basically gives local control to the school districts and the bargaining units to figure out what that alternative system is. And I think everybody knows here that all of our school districts are different, and they all have different needs and different challenges. And this gives them an opportunity to take a separate group or pool of money and try to figure out a way to reward, you know, some alternative ideas for increasing performance. And so I think if we start, you know, taking that ability away from our local school districts, we're going to really lose out on, I think, the overall intent of the whole QCOMP system.
Any other discussion? Commissioner Segrin, Representative Erickson has asked you to come down to talk about this. When I heard that you were coming, I was hoping that you were coming because it's such a great bill and that you wanted to speak at the end of the discussion of the total bill and talk about the total proposal for reform and closing the achievement gap and the quality education and the special education funding and the property tax relief and the reading and literacy parts of this that are increasing and changing, and the 21st century high school plan and the enhanced rigor and the accountability and the PE standards that are in this bill and all the rest of the good things that met the goals that the K-12 committee has been working on during this year. But we've kind of gotten bogged down a little bit on amendment number 53. And if you have specific things that address that, I would appreciate hearing it. But I would also appreciate, after the vote is taken, if you wanted to comment on the whole bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's a pleasure to be here with you and with the members today. I would like to comment on the proposal. The intent, as Representative Erickson said, for the alternative compensation system was to use the 60% of all revenue that is received by the district. It was not to restrict it to just the QCOMP monies. In fact, when we negotiated this, and Senator Kelly and I and Representative Sikora, that was actually a suggestion because there was concern that the whole alternative compensation system might apply to all the revenue, and he wanted to restrict it to 60% of all revenue. And so that was the agreement that we actually agreed to with him a couple of years ago. The districts have been negotiating based on that premise, and we have, as Representative Peterson said, we have all sorts of different kinds of agreements, but the idea was that when an alternative compensation system was negotiated, 60% of the monies would go towards reforming the steps and lane system, providing career opportunities for teachers, and also providing some compensation based on performance. And that was the concept behind it, and it was to reform the steps and lane system. I would also like to say that some of these issues right now are in litigation, and I think that it would be wiser if these subjects would wait until things went through the process. We're sorry that that has happened. I think that quality compensation or your alternative teacher pay system has been an extraordinary, wonderful gift that teachers and school districts are really loving and really changing the way things are happening. I hear teachers over and over and over again saying, this has really changed my life. It's changed the conversation around the lunch table. We're able to talk together collaboratively, try to strategically look at what we're doing in the classroom for our kids. Preliminarily, we're starting to see some wonderful achievement gains made by districts and school sites. And I think we need to give this system a chance to work. I think it's wonderful, it's extraordinary, and I would ask that you not support this amendment.
Representative Peterson, do you have any questions?
Thank you.
Commissioner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wasn't sure. I thought I'd be debating the commissioner this today. Nice to see you, Commissioner.
Thank you.
And I agree with you. It is a very good program. And I brought this amendment because I'm concerned about what will happen to the program if we don't pass this amendment. You see it in jeopardy already in the Senate bill. They put no money forward to even continue the program. And I happen to come from a district where they were so hesitant about this program, that they ended up putting together a program and voting it down. And I was very distressed over that, quite frankly. Not just because I think that it is an opportunity for us to look at reform. I think this amendment will help us to maintain a good program, and I don't think it takes anything away. I really don't. We have 60% of QComp being used for performance pay. That's a huge amount in terms of what we've had, you know, in the past. And we're really looking at reforms. I think, at least the ones that I've looked at, I think you're seeing a great deal of reform. And I think we're quibbling about percentages of what's used for performance pay and how you restructure the steps and lanes. So, you know, I don't think we're so far apart here, and I'm sad to see, or to hear, even, that there have been inconsistencies, perhaps, in some of the grants, and at least perceived inconsistencies. And I think this helps clarify the language. I think it's our responsibility as a legislature. Quite frankly, I don't want the courts making a decision of this kind of importance about what we will do in the future with QComp. It belongs here, I think, at the legislature. And I don't think this is going to hurt any of the programs. In fact, I think it will enhance them. I think you will see more districts applying, and you will get much, much better results in the future with this kind of language than you will have with leaving it as it is.
Commissioner? Madam Chair, and Representative Peterson, well, I respectfully disagree. I think that you need the resources to do this program comprehensively. And the QComp money does not only go for performance pay, but it also goes to create career opportunities. It goes to create the kinds of just-in-time job embedded professional development, buying the substitute teachers if that they so choose, so the teachers can get together or craft the kind of schedule and structure that will allow teachers to do that. And the intent clearly was, we would not have written it if we had intended to have it clarified. The intent was that 60% of the revenue, using some of the general fund money too, would be used to go to craft the kind of a process that we really feel is robust. So that was an agreement. That was something that we really worked out very precisely. And I feel like the legislature is really now changing the intent of the legislation. We have many districts that are applying and continuing. We probably will have some announcements in the very near future on some more districts. I know your district in the past has struggled with a compensation system in the past, and I think there's, you know, possibly some history there that may still you know, be influencing that. But I desire also that your district would be in QComp, and we would certainly be glad to work with them as much as possible to see that they can participate.
Representative Erickson.
Madam Chair, I'd like a roll call, please.
Representative Kranz.
Madam Chair, I'm wondering, based on the discussed possible or even pending litigation that we've heard from the State Department, I'm wondering if we should maybe offer, if there's anybody from Education Minnesota that would like to speak to this point, or if I'll leave that to the discretion of the Chair, but, I mean, if it's something that you might interest or ascertain, I would throw that out there.
I invited the Commissioner down because she is the Commissioner. I said that if the governor walks in here, I will listen to him. But I didn't say that we would start a debate with people from the audience, because this is our bill. This is Representative Breiland's K-12 committee bill, Representative Mariani's K-12 policy bill, as their committee developed it. This is the second step. From here it goes to finance, and then it goes to ways and means, and then it goes to conference committee when the executive department has even more position to state their case. I very much admire Representative Segrin, now Commissioner Segrin, for her work that she did at the legislature. I was very proud to stand on the stage at Proctor High School with Commissioner Segrin
the day we she brought the check to Proctor for developing QCOM. I haven't been part of all the discussions, but I have been here for 31 years at the legislature, and I have never seen a situation where we had to be afraid at the second step of the process, that we had to be afraid of an amendment getting on and never ever talking about it again. I think whatever happens in this committee, we're not going to stop discussion of QCOM from now until the middle of May. I respect very much the input that the Department of Education has made to the committees in early childhood, in K-12, and in higher ed. But their work is not done. The department's work is not done. If this goes on, I would expect that discussions will continue. And maybe even heaven, it's happened before, we come out with a better product on the issue than the department wanted, or whether some legislators individually or collectively ever dreamed of. Because it is so important to the parents and families and teachers and superintendents and principals and anybody that thinks about education. And we have spent almost 45 minutes on this issue here. And it can bog us down. We've got the room for the rest of the day. Or we can drop it. Thank the commissioner so much for coming. Invite commissioner to keep on with the dialogue. I don't think an amendment establishes legislative intent that is going to have great influence on a court case at this point in time. I have no idea when the court case is up or going to come. But I bet if this amendment goes on, we'll find out in the next few weeks. I think that we can continue our work and have a complete bill. And, G. Commissioner, I wish you will stay to the time period when we've got all the amendments discussed and ask you to make a comment on the overall bill.
Madam Chair, I would be glad to do that if I'm still here at 5. If you're still here at 5:30, I may have to go. But depends on how fast your committee.
I have a feeling that it's going to go fast.
That may be an incentive.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome, and thank you, Madam Chair, for letting me speak.
Thank you, committee members. Is there any further discussion on the Peterson Amendment adopting A-53? A roll call has been asked for. Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Greiling.
Yes.
Representative Mariani.
Aye.
Representative Peterson.
Yes.
Representative Slawick.
Yes.
Representative Rukavina.
Yes.
Representative Murphy.
Yes.
Representative Demmer.
No.
Representative Abler. Excused. Representative Brown.
No.
Representative Bunn.
Yes.
Representative Eastland.
No.
Representative Erickson.
No.
Representative Garofalo.
No.
Representative Hamilton.
No.
Representative Heidgerken.
Yes.
Representative Hornstein.
Yes.
Representative Kranz.
Yes.
Representative Mason.
Yes.
Representative Pulowski.
Yes.
Representative Ruth.
No.
Representative Rude.
Yes.
Representative Tilbury.
Yes.
Representative Ward.
Yes.
Representative Wardlow.
Yes.
Yep.
Amendment A53 has been adopted 16-7. Amendment A54, Representative Garrison.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move A54, please.
Representative Erickson moves adoption of A54. Representative Erickson.
And Madam Chair, thank you very much for allowing the Commissioner to speak. I am very grateful that you could do that. This amendment is to restore the library study that was in the governor's proposal in the bill that Representative Mariani and I authored in the policy that then proceeded on to K-12 finance. In my discussions today with the library folks, and I'm a co-author on the library bill with the speaker, they expressed to me how important it is to have the study done. There are a lot of questions about our whole library system, and I think it's necessary that we support this comprehensive library study structure. We have an excellent state librarian in Suzanne Miller, and she brought this forth in the governor's proposal, and I would really hope that we could support this. Yes, I take the funding from the merger, but in my last reading in the newspaper of the merger, that's in question, so I think we can afford $250,000, or $200,000, excuse me, of the one-time money that you were planning to use otherwise for this very important study. And Madam Chair, I'd ask for a roll call.
Representative Riley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move to divide the amendment between line 119 and 120.
Second. Representative Dimmer. Do you want to wait? Okay. Representative Dimmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just found out I got something else to speak to. Representative Garling, I think your intent here is to ask for the study to be done but not provide any money for it. Is that the bottom line? Mm-hmm.
Representative Garland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Dimmer, yes.
Okay, Madam Chair.
Representative
Dimmer. Well, Madam Chair, I be honest about it. I don't know what this would do as far as the department's concerned. I was going to speak to the need for the study, Madam Chair, and I guess I don't know if we need $200,000 for the study, or if we need $50,000, or if we need $400,000. I'm not sure. The original bill, I think, had $750,000, and I'm not sure if that wasn't it something like that. Representative Dowling, do you remember how much the original bill asked for in the study?
Representative Browning. Madam Chair, Representative Dimmer's staff has reminded us that it was $200,000.
Oh, it was, okay.
So, Representative Dimmer, go ahead and build the base.
Well, Madam Chair, if I will, I'm going to talk about the study itself, yeah. And then we can talk about whether we think we should allocate money toward it. Just for a little bit of background in establishing a base, Madam Chair, I serve on the foundation board for the Rochester Public Library. It's not the library board itself, but it's the foundation board that has to do with money. And what it's taught me, what I've learned, is that we have a very complex system of library management in our state of Minnesota. And I had a little background work done when I saw this idea of study come. In fact, I had a conversation with some of the folks down in Rochester after one of our meetings. I said, it seems to me there's some complex issues with the way we do libraries. The Rochester Library has grown very large, and it's a very nice library. It's a very good library. And it has some issues with the local library's cooperating group down there. And they provide service. They used to provide some services. They don't any longer because of the growth, the change in technologies. And it just occurred to me that there are some differences now that we didn't have back when these library structures were set up, Madam Chair. We have something called federated libraries. This was done about 50 years ago. We have consolidated regional systems that have to do with whether or not a library, and we have federated regional systems, have to do whether they're aligned with local government or not. We have funding mostly by local units of government, but now we get the state doing more funding. We have changes due to technology that link libraries totally differently than what we used to have. My understanding is that the way we did our library system goes back to like 1958 or something. So, Madam Chair, the bottom line is I don't pretend to understand everything about the libraries, but I do think it's time. This is not, you know, oftentimes we do studies here because we don't know if we should go forward with something. So let's do a study, and then that gives us time to think about it. This is an example of something where we really are stepping back and saying, how do we, and let library folks do this. How do we do our library systems here in the state, and, you know, is there some structural things we should do that might be helpful? So I think that it's a good idea to go forward with this study and do this, and, you know, quite frankly, if it takes some dollars to do this, I think we should direct some to go that way. And quite frankly, I think the regional, now I'll speak now to the dividing of the amendment, that's okay, we can divide it. But I would support some money, it's library monies, going toward libraries. So whether it's the Hennepin County, Minneapolis, or we're looking at the whole system, they would benefit from this too. So I think out of $4.5 million, to say $200,000 should go toward this study that might benefit them also would make some sense. So if that makes sense, as I talked about two different issues after developing my base, I hope that's helpful.
Representative Greiling, on your division, which part of the amendment do you want to discuss first?
Madam Chair, I think Representative Demmer has made a very good case for us passing the first half first.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Is there any further discussion on the first half of the Greiling, or of the Erickson Amendment?
Yes, the Greiling Division.
The Greiling Amendment.
Pardon me? Representative Erickson?
Madam Chair, I was just having some fun. The Greiling Amendment to the Erickson Amendment, but I'd say it's the Greiling Division to the Erickson
right.
Amendment.
Is there any further discussion? All in favor of the Greiling Division to the Erickson Amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
The motion is adopted. Representative Erickson.
Well, Madam Chair, I guess now we need to vote on the second half. The dollars that are set aside for the merger, I know in talking to the library folks, they emphasized to me that it might be, you know, the technology, but I would hope that we could take $200,000, especially now when this merger discussion is continuing, and maybe along the way we can restore if this 4.5 is the absolute figure that was negotiated, and I would hope that members would support the second half of the amendment and provide funding for the study. And I would like a roll call.
Representative Ryan.
Madam Chair, I would oppose this amendment at this time. I think this is an important study, and if a good case is made as we go forward and in the conference committee that it needs funding, that we could discuss that at that time. But I think to take this money from the merger when, yes, it isn't fully voted on by Hennepin County yet, but maybe by the time we get to the conference committee, I think it's premature to take the funding from this source at this time. But I'm willing to work on the issue if it does need funding as we go forward. But for now, I think we need to vote down this second half.
Any further discussion?
Representative Eastland.
Not to belabor the matter, but is the issue, Representative Greiling, the source of the $200,000?
Representative Greiling.
Madam Chair, Representative Eastland, yes.
Would you be amenable to an amendment that would take half of the money from line 134.1 and then the other half from the 134.26?
Madam Chair.
Representative Riley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Eastland, I think at this moment I would just like to vote down this part, and as I said, I would be amenable to discussing finding money from another source as we go forward in the conference committee, but right now we have before us an amendment to an amendment, so I think we can amend it again.
Is it here?
Any other discussion? Representative Erickson.
Madam Chair, I would draw my roll call.
Thank you, Representative Erickson.
All in favor of the Eric's adoption of the second part of A54, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion.
Are we at an amendment?
Motion is adopted. Pardon?
Madam Chair?
Representative Mariani.
Division of...
We didn't do so hot with division yesterday, but let's try it. All in favor of A54, the Erickson funding proposal for the study, lines 120 to 126. Raise your right hand. All opposed, raise your right hand. Nine ayes and 13 noes. So the amendment is not adopted. That portion of the amendment is not adopted. But Ms. Hartnett, I think I have to have a hearing test. A55, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the A55 amendment.
Representative Erickson moves adoption of Amendment 855.
And Madam Chair, I have an oral amendment on line 1.3. This is pretty amusing, but it's going to happen.
I have it circled already, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The year 2113 should be 2013, correct, Seth? And that should be in line 1.6 also. So, Madam Chair, I'd like to incorporate those changes.
Representative Erickson wishes to incorporate delete 2113 on line 1.3 and insert 2013. Representative Erickson.
Madam Chair, it has been the custom, I think, of this legislature to sunset certain provisions, and you know, this one for those of us who don't live in Minneapolis and St. Paul, who don't get this authority to bond without voter approval, really feel that we should revisit this in 2013. And so with that, Madam Chair, I would ask that we approve A55.
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, members, I actually like the amendment before the oral amendment. Madam Chair, I would respectfully speak against the amendment. We've talked about this, and we had this amendment the last version of it, the last committee we voted down. We talked about this a number of times. Minneapolis-St. Paul faces some pretty unique, very unique situation in this regard. We have the confluence of a number of things. We have lots and lots of facilities, and we have lots and lots of very, very old facilities. In addition to that, because of the built-up nature of our old cities, our facilities are pretty landlocked features. And so essentially when you add all that up, what you have is a pretty high maintenance cost, a pretty high incidence of constant work that needs to be done with some restrictions, so with a lot of restrictions. And so if we were to come, periodically to people in the district. Through no fault of the district, just, you know, the nature of these buildings, you wind up constantly asking voters for this authority. And there's a real cost to that. And so the intent here is to, as we did up to now, to, you know, have this every, I think, 5 years or so. And we bogged down, the legislature here, the delegation from both cities, the issues, the education issues of both cities get bogged down by this particular request every 5 years. Both cities, I think, have managed their process very well. The issues that we face are not going to go away. They're probably not even going to go away in 100 years. And so I think what you've got is some very responsible behavior on the part of both districts dealing with some very, very unique situations. And I don't see the need for us, even every 5 years, to constantly review this authority. So I'd ask for your support in opposing this amendment.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Mariani, I understand the condition of buildings in Minneapolis and St. Paul, but it is always good policy to have sunsets. I know that when you were in the majority, not you particularly, but the Democrats, that sunsets were very important. I served with Phyllis Kahn on government operations, as did Representative Greiling, and we heard about sunsets all the time, and I would suspect Representative Pawlowski still deals with sunsets also. So, Madam Chair, I'd ask for a roll call.
Roll call is the next for Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would hope that members would vote against this amendment. I actually feel quite strongly about it because we tried very hard to balance out our bill, and we wanted to make sure that we did not disproportionately favor Minneapolis and St. Paul. They do get more need-based funding than other districts. And so it stands to reason that they would get slightly more funding than other districts. But we feel that we did a very good job this year of not overly disproportionately funding Minneapolis and St. Paul. They lost the concentration factor that they had for limited English proficiency. We did not fund many of the requests from the cities or projects of the sort that often this legislature has funded under PFL leadership. But one of the things, while we were balancing out that equation with the learning disparities that the city, our core cities face, was this particular provision. I feel very strongly that we keep it in the way it is.
Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I just have to, in light of Representative Grayling's testimony, this doesn't change any funding at all. This is purely policy. This is just saying that in 4 years, I mean, Representative Mariani hit the nail right on the head. He doesn't think they should have to come back and ask the legislature for approval to bond without public approval. And other people think maybe they should have to come back in 4 years. It's not about how much money they're getting, Representative Grayling. This is purely policy stuff. And I believe that the exception to the rule is granting local governments the authority to bond for up to $15 million. That's an exception to the rule without public approval. And I think exceptions, Representative Erickson is right, exceptions should have a time frame on them so that future legislatures that could have different makeups could look at this and say, is this still good policy? We get reminded that this is an exception. And I have school districts in my area, and quite frankly, there's others in the state that would love to be able to bond without having to go to the public and get a voter approval. I can think of some rural districts that have had a terrible time trying to get bonds passed because of issues. But they are issues, and they cause them to have to deal with those sorts of things. This doesn't change whether or not they can do it. It just says how long they can do it before the issue is revisited. And I happen to think in this case the sunset's a good idea because future legislators maybe see this differently. So I would urge a yes vote on the amendment.
Any further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Greiling.
No.
Representative Mariani.
No.
Representative Peterson.
No.
Representative Slawick.
No.
Representative Rukavina. Representative Murphy.
No.
Representative Demmer.
Yes.
Representative Brown?
No.
Representative Bunn?
No.
Representative Eastland?
Yes.
Representative Erickson?
Yes.
Representative Garofalo?
Yes.
Representative Hamilton?
Yes.
Representative Heidgerken?
Yes.
Representative Hornstein?
No.
Representative Kranz?
Yes.
Representative Mason?
No.
Representative Pulaski?
No.
Representative Ruth?
Yes.
Oh.
We're going to have to do it all anyway.
Representative Rude?
No.
Representative Tilbury?
No.
Representative Ward?
No.
I'm sorry, Representative Wardlow?
Yes.
On 8, yes, 13, no, the 855 amendment is not adopted. 856, Representative Ruth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move 856. And Madam Chair, this is on page 27, 28. It's section 39. This is the school finance reform, the task force that is established. And it's regarding how the membership is drawn up. And as you see, the amendment states, and it's just about being fair and balanced, just so that there's a balance between the majority and the minority. And it states two members from the Senate, appointed by the Senate Majority Leader, two members appointed by the Senate Minority Leader, two members appointed by the Speaker of the House, two members appointed by the House Minority Leader. So I hope this is an amendment that we can pass. It's just one of fairness, no matter who's in the majority. We don't know going forth, and we know that we're not to set precedents. So in going forth, it seems to be a very fair and balanced method to choose the task force members.
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, I would respectfully speak against the amendment. I don't think we need to tie the hands of our leadership on this issue. I think just a month ago we had our leader here, our House Speaker, make appointments to a variety of commissions and committees. I think she exhibited great balance and wisdom in making those appointments and being inclusive of our minority party. There may be reasons down the line for a number of other issues where it may be wiser to have, for instance, your committee chairs be appointed to various committees or commissions by virtue of the power that they have in holding that gavel. And so, members, I think we don't have evidence here of our leadership not, we don't have evidence of them being partisan. So I said, let us go forward with this commission with the wisdom of our current speaker and our current majority leader.
Representative Ruth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Mariani, I'm certainly not anything like that. Absolutely. Our current Speaker of the House is very fair. But we don't know who's going to be the Speaker of the House, obviously, going forward. And we're putting this into law. So, to me, it just seems, obviously the Speaker of the House is from a certain party, and we're trying not to be partisan. This seems like a rather partisan move to do that, and that's why it seems to me to be much more fair to have the Speaker appoint two, and then the minority leader, whatever party that would be, to appoint two. And as I say, just so we have a balance between the majority and the minority.
Representative Wardlaw.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Mariani, you happen to be one of the best chairs I've ever worked with, and I hate to disagree with you, however. I was on the Pension Commission, and under the GOP leadership, the breakdown was, on the House side, was three Republicans, two Democrats, because there's only five on each side. And on the Senate side, it was three Democrats, two Republicans, and that was about as even as they could get it. before that, I think it was under DFL control, the breakdown was 4-1, majority to minority, and that has happened again. So on a pension commission, it is not bipartisan. It's very partisan. It's 4 of a majority to 1 of a minority, and on a pension commission, and so I can see that happening that way again on the task force, so I think there's a reason to have 2-2.
Representative Wardlaw, I'd like to remind you that there was a time when I was the only Democrat on the House side.
Madam Chair.
On the pension commission. But I won't go into that.
Thank you for supporting my position.
Representative Vaughn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This issue of appointments has come up in several committees I've been on this session, and in previous discussions, we are apprised of the fact that according to the House rules, it may be different on the Senate side, that only the Speaker can do these appointments. They can do it in consultation with the Majority Leader and try to be as fair as possible, but that, in fact, the Speaker has to, by the rules, appoint according to what we heard.
Oh. Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, I just want to say for the record, Representative Wardlaw, you're one of the better members, or one of the best members I've had on any committee. So.
Any further discussion?
Madam Chair, would Representative Bunn be amenable to that then if we amended however you say that, in cooperation with the minority leader?
Representative Grimey?
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's as Representative Bunn said, in the House rules already, so that would happen already. And this is an ad hoc task force. It's not like an ongoing thing as well. And another thing that's important about this task force, because it is the education funding task force, is that the Speaker used great wisdom in appointing to make sure we have Greater Minnesota regional centers, urban core, inner ring suburban, outer ring suburban. And I think if you have so many cooks spoiling the broth in addition to following our House rules, that to have one person responsible for the balance on this quite small committee, I think is important.
I guess that means the answer is no, Madam Chair.
Any further discussion? All in favor of adoption of the A56 Ruth Amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
The motion does not prevail. Representative Heigerkin, A57.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move A57. And members, what this particular amendment does, it refers to what I've tried previously to do, and it addresses the LEP. And right now, we are at 5. It's capped at 5. My amendment would move it up to 7 and not unlimited. It's something that we can bring forth in the future. And one of the concerns that I have with this is that I realize we changed the concentration factor, but that will not take care of the issue. When we looked at St. Paul's at 29% uncapped right now, Minneapolis is right around close to that. We have some very, very high percentages. And I tried to get a bill done earlier in session that addressed the issue. Presently, there's integration monies also going forth for LEP, for EL, among other issues. Addressing, for example, Mariana Tremba's district, Representative Tremba's district, within the first 3 or 4 grades, there's 40% minority students, and they get $0 of integration monies. And I think we can start looking at that. There's an achievement gap problems that we're having across the state of Minnesota. And it is not just the Minneapolis and St. Paul. And I'm a little bit worried about that. And again, when you look at the runs, the school districts, folks, look at where Minneapolis is at $1,029 over 2 years, this bill has. Well, Basel is at $440. Is that fair? And again, we have to look at that there are certain things that we do. And by allowing this bill to go uncapped, with allowing LEP to go uncapped, we got into a problem with special ed because it went uncapped. Eventually, we capped it. So I'm just asking for a 2-year extension. We can come back and visit that. But to go in and just do something endless, it creates some real major concerns about what we're doing to our formula. With that said,
Representative Riley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I oppose this amendment, and we had this one in Education Finance Committee, and there were more people that understood that in what we did in this bill was we removed the concentration factor, which was not exactly a welcome move by Minneapolis and St. Paul. And so Representative Heidgerken, by not, you know, that was something that actually gets more LEP money out to your district. So I still wonder if you understand this amendment here, because by having, if we ended up going back to 7 years, we would more than likely then need to put back in the concentration factor. And I think that by eliminating it and having unlimited, we have a balanced bill where we more fairly distribute the funding, as you have said. But we had a lot of discussion about the fact that there's nothing magical about 5 years. There's nothing magical about 7 years. There never was a seven-year cap in the first place. We had unlimited, and then it went to 5 years. And that is proven unworkable because some students, while some might finish up sooner than that, others need more time. And so just to have whatever time we need for students, let the local districts decide. But we also removed, if you recall, the concentration factor, which is, you know, your discussion of Minneapolis and St. Paul is not so pertinent with that not being in there.
Representative Heidgerken.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I was there with the discussion in conference committee. I know we did the runs previously. It's one of the reasons why we did make that change is because of the discrepancies of some of the small school districts get left way behind, and Minneapolis and St. Paul, their new monies, we made the change in the LEP to 5 years because of that, and we're extending it to 7 years, and I can live with that, because 5 years is not enough. If you have students moving in from Somalia or where not all, 5 years is not enough, and I agree with that, but I think 7 years is a good movement towards that. I think that's enough.
Representative Mariani?
Madam Chair, members, and I do appreciate, Representative Heidgerken's concern for all kids all over the state. I think, frankly, what we did here moves us in that direction. My school district in St. Paul, we have phenomenal concentrations of young people who come to us not speaking English as their first language. Just a couple of years ago, when the final camps were closed in Southeast Asia, we had a pretty big influx, you remember that, about 3 years ago. So there are challenges there, but I do think that, I think Representative Garland said it right. Members, the research tells us that the five-year cap was wrong. Commissioner Siegman herself testified to Representative Garland's committee that was an inadequate number. Seven is certainly a better if you're going to do a cap at all, but the research and the experience, frankly, and what we heard from both rural schools and metro schools is that not all these young people are coming to us in the same situation. Some of them you can get through an ELL program to English proficiency in under 5 years. Some of them it's going to take 8 or 9 years. And so the research doesn't bear out, the use of a cap here. And as I said earlier, I think Representative Grayling said this correctly, that this bill right here moves us to be able to address the growing reality of ELL students all over the state. And I think next year, as we continue to look at what PS Minnesota and some other groups are proposing for us, challenging us in terms of looking at our entire formula approach, I would certainly hope that this issue be at the center of that discussion, and we'll get another crack at maybe even making it better. But at this point, I would respectfully oppose your amendment.
Any further discussion? Representative Eastland.
I just have a question of Representative Mariani, maybe you, or Representative Riley, I don't know which one. Is there a place where we can find the cost reflected in lifting the cap and making it extending it indefinitely?
Mr. Nedrom?
Madam Chair, Representative Eastland, under the House proposal, the House is doing about 3 changes to the LEP formula, and the combination of those 3 changes costs about $6.2 million per year. The formula is being uncapped as the first change from 5 years
extended. The second change is to eliminate the concentration formula of $190 per pupil, and the third change is to push the funding for all pupils on the basic from $584 to $815, and the sum of those three changes is about $6.2 million per year.
Representative Eastland.
Do we know what portion of that would be just the results of people that would want to stay beyond 5 years?
Madam Chair, Representative Eastland, I can run upstairs and grab that number for you real quick. The other thing to keep in mind with that is we're kind of skittish about the number because the data for years past five isn't well reported by districts since there's no funding implications for that. But I'll run up and grab that number for you.
Mr. Strom, I don't think that's necessary. I don't think we'd be down by the time we've concluded our vote. The elevators are really slow. Any further discussion? All in favor of adoption A57, the Heigerken Amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion does not prevail. Representative
Heigerken, vote.
A58.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be very short here. This is the Libre Academy that was not funded, and right now it's the county. It's a sober school out in central Minnesota, and they do have some county monies going into it, and they're looking at keeping that school going, and it's they're asking for a small appropriation of $25,000, and they do not qualify for charter if they're too small yet, but hopefully within a year or two they're going to apply for charter status. They're trying to get there. So with that said, they have students that come in. It's at Litchfield. It's not in my district, but they have students coming from school districts around, and they go to school there, and the intent is try to get those students off of the drug program and get them out of drugs, I should say. And it's a good little program. We've got something going there, and we hope to get them there until they become a charter. I think the membership might be, after next year, large enough to become a charter.
Representative Bryan.
Madam Chair, I would have to respectfully oppose this amendment. I'm very sympathetic with sober schools and supported Representative Holberg's change on the floor wholeheartedly. I think we don't want to go down the road of starting to, we have startup money for charter schools and they get quite a few funding from other places, and if we start funding them when they're too small to succeed, you know, that's part of the problem we've had with charter schools. Mainly they fail because of financial instability. So I think we want our charter schools to be well planned out, make sure they have enough students before they start, before we start funding them. If we start one more than just the current startup money that's available in state law, I'm sure there would be more to follow with other good causes.
Representative Heigerken.
Madam Chair, thank you, Representative Grading, for your last three words for very good cause. Thank you.
Any further discussion? All in favor of the Heigerken A58 amendment, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
The motion is not adopted. Representative Riley is going to keep that in mind as she progresses. Representative Demmer, A59.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That is my amendment. I move the A59 amendment. Members, page 49 of the bill, this deals with the responsible family life and sexuality education programs. Very controversial area. We spent a lot of time talking about this in a policy committee. And, Madam Chair, all this really does is give school boards it changes it from must offer a program like this to they may offer a program like this. Madam Chair, we have a very diverse range of schools throughout our state run by school boards from throughout the state, northeast and northwest to urban to southwest, southeast, all with different norms and different ways of looking at their schools and their kids. I might also add there are various sizes. We have school districts that are extremely small, one-section schools, And we're saying that all schools of all sizes are being mandated to offer this by the legislature.
No, I got it.
Representative Mariani, in an earlier testimony regarding the bonding for schools, since they say they don't have to go get taxpayer approval because our local school districts do a good job making choices about things like this. And I think that by giving locally elected school board officials who are there as policymakers, as citizens, to make choices for their schools, not really making professional education decisions, because that's up to the educators and the administrators, but to reflect the values and the ideals and the vision, if you will, of the local people. That's what school boards do. I think this sort of thing fits into that category, and we start getting into the business of mandating curriculum, which is kind of what this is, Madam Chair. I think it's a big mistake, and I think it takes away from some of the control that we want to have some of our local school boards exert. So, Madam Chair, this would say they don't, it's taken away the mandate that they have to require this and say that they may require with these parameters, and I think they can make the best decision for their own schools.
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, I would respectfully oppose the amendment. You know, currently, and I do think we do need to tread, I do agree, Representative, we do need to tread carefully with you know, the balance between state directives and local control. I think it's an appropriate debate. We currently, members, do have a mandate to districts to provide STD education. And so we found an overriding public health rationale to do that, to make that direction to our local boards. In this bill, what we're doing is we're making available for every student who, by the way, and there's been a debate about opting in and opting out, but every student who either opts in or opts out, right now the language is opt in, to make available this level of responsible education. And it would be a shame, members, I think, that by accident of living in a particular, you know, school district in the state, that you would not have access, you know, to this education, to this opportunity, simply because your local board decided not to make that available, and yet a neighboring district would have decided the other way. We think it is important to provide this level of education as an option for students, and so this particular language with the must merely directs those school boards to prepare the curriculum, have policies in place, have services in place to deliver that curriculum. And currently in the bill as it sits, parents can choose to opt into accessing that. So we're just trying to make sure that there's equal access to this curriculum throughout the state. And the language in this amendment would essentially get rid of that expectation and really just take us back to current law, where school districts can do pretty much whatever they want to do on this area.
Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. To say that it's a shame that they wouldn't offer this and not have it available, you know, we do have choice. People can go to schools that they want to go to, and I quite frankly think this would go toward choice. Number one, we're letting school boards decide whether they want this for their district or not. And secondly, we're saying that if a certain school district decides they don't want to have this and somebody thinks it's important for their children, they can go to another school district that chooses to offer that. So I really do think it's a good option for school boards to be able to make these choices. They're good people. They're elected. This is very simply and purely a matter of do we take away that local control or not. And Madam Chair, I'd request a roll call on this one.
Any further discussion? The clerk will call the roll on A-59.
Representative Greiling.
No.
Representative Mariani.
No.
Representative Peterson.
No.
Representative Slawick.
No.
Representative Murphy.
Pass.
Representative Demmer.
Yes.
Representative Brown.
No.
Representative Bunn.
No.
Representative Eastland.
Yes.
Representative Erickson.
Yes.
Representative Garofalo.
Yes.
Representative Hamilton. President Heidgerken?
Yes.
President Hornstein?
No.
President Kranz?
No.
President Mason?
No.
President Polosky?
Yes.
President Ruth?
Yes.
President Rude?
No.
President Tilbury?
No.
President Ward?
Yes.
President Wardlow?
Yes.
President Abler?
Yeah.
President Mer.
I vote 9 to 11. The motion is not adopted.
Ooh. They're alive over there.
Getting closer and closer. A60?
Representative, yes, thank you, Madam Chair.
Oh, Representative Heidgerken.
Madam Chair, this is another one that addresses the low-revenue districts. Some of the districts like Wabasso, et cetera, they're getting $440. New monies over 2 years based on all categoricals and everything else. But being that it was not successful with the LEP, I feel this one may not be too successful either, so I'm pulling it.
Thank you. I love cooperation. How about 61, Representative Heidgerken?
Madam Chair, this one you'll like.
Okay,
Madam Chair,
tell me about it.
Okay, Madam Chair, in appropriations, I think I'm going to yield to yes, I'll move on A61, and I'll appeal to Representative. I don't think there's going to be any discussion, because I think Representative Greiling, I talked to Representative Dabney, I think we're all on board on this. Representative Greiling, if you would speak on his behalf.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Heidker. Actually, what I had, what Representative Dabney talked to me about, when I saw this amendment, I see that you're dealing with student organizations, but I wasn't sure what you were doing here. I thought he was trying to redistribute the money based on per pupil, and this, as near as I can tell, just deletes the current distribution, and so I wonder if this amendment does what you want it to do. Maybe staff could help us out here. Mr. Crow.
Mr. Crow.
Madam Chair and members, Representative Dabney's, I think, well, let me just speak to what we've done in the past. Is this appropriation has not had these kind of sub-riders in the past. It's been appropriated just at the total amount level, and then the commissioners made the grants. This, I think there was some concern because there was a report on current expenditures where some of the organizations would get less than what they got last year because of these earmarks. And but again, in the past, we've always just made the appropriation without the earmarks that are listed in the bill this year.
Madam Chair, Mr. Crow, then the way they are earmarked maybe is the amendment that I do support. How are they allocated? I mean, the commissioner just willy-nilly decides, or is it somehow based on... now, what we were interested in, I think, Representative Dabney and Representative Heidgerken and myself, was it would somehow go out based on how many students were involved. Wasn't that what we were talking about? That there were some organizations getting more money and they didn't have as many students, and then some of the others that were very strong organizations were getting less money.
Madam Chair, I'm going to pull this amendment. And Representative Gladney, it's got a couple other stops. We'll work on this and get it done right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, but before you do that, Representative Heidgerken, why did you like the marketing program well enough to save it?
I haven't figured that one out yet.
Thank you. A61 is withdrawn. A62, Representative Erickson.
Madam Chair, I move A62. Madam Chair and committee, this is an amendment some of you have seen before. This has to do with the study that Representative Biskins and I conducted on figuring out the minutes of time spent in learning in every school district. And so this amendment, it's in regard to extended learning time. So this amendment, and I must say I applaud Representative Dabney for what he said in K-12 the other day, because he pointed out some great disparities among both ALCs and charter schools. And what this amendment would say is that, you know, you can't receive extended learning time revenue unless you are at least at the state average, which is 64,800 minutes. That's counted as one. So it's not just Minneapolis that's a little behind. It's other schools. And I think we need to send a strong message that if you're going to take extended time revenue, you can't be taking that if your school day is less than an expected state average school day. And in our calculations, that was the 64,800 minutes. Madam Chair, I'd ask for a roll call.
Roll call has been asked for. Is there any further discussion? Representative Mariani?
Well, Madam Chair, I would encourage members to look at, try to get a spreadsheet to find out where your district's going to fall on this in terms of whether you're meeting the state average or not. And if you're not sure about that, then you're probably better off rejecting this amendment and then go find the information and perhaps come back and revisit this amendment sometime. But I would encourage a no vote at this point.
Mr. Strom, do we have that data of how many minutes our kids go to school at any one school in a comparison or a model form?
Madam Chair, we did have that printout at committee the other day. Yeah, we do have a copy here. We could have the pages copy if you like.
Oh, I don't know if we need it right now.
You can just read off another one.
Do you think we need it? Representative Mariani?
Madam Chair, I leave it to each member, but, you know, we voted this down the other day, and I think there were some eyebrows that were raised when certain members looked, saw that perhaps their districts were not going to meet this threshold.
They were surprised and astonished?
Madam Chair, I think they were.
Democrats? Republicans?
Both.
Both?
Yes.
Okay.
Nonpartisan.
Yeah. The eyebrows were nonpartisan, Madam Chair. The eyebrows.
I believe it. Any further discussion on the Erickson A62 amendment?
Madam Chair.
Representative Hyde.
Yeah, just a short comment. We had a good discussion on it. I know, for example, I've been picking on Minneapolis, and I apologize, but we're 14 days less than average, than 20 minutes spent in the classroom, than the average state of Minnesota. And we worry a little bit about giving them extended time when actually they're not in school when they should be in school. And it ain't just Minneapolis. There's a number of other ones, even in rural Minnesota, that may be a little bit on the wrong side of the ledger. But I think it's something we need to look at. With that said, let's vote.
I bet Representative Reiling and Mariani are going to do that as the bill continues on its path, if it ever gets to its path. Representative Ward. Roll call. I'm sorry.
Yes. If you're on deck.
Call the roll, Mr. Chan.
Representative Greiling.
No.
Representative Mariani.
No.
Representative Peterson.
No.
Representative Slawick.
No.
Representative Murphy.
No.
Representative Demmer.
Yes.
Representative Abler. Representative Brown.
No.
Representative Bunn.
No.
Representative Eastland.
Yes.
Representative Erickson.
Yes.
Representative Garofalo.
Yes.
Representative Hamilton. Representative Heidgerken.
Yes.
Representative Hornstein.
No.
Representative Kranz.
No.
President Mason. President Pulaski.
No.
President Ruth.
Yes.
President Rude.
No.
President Tilbury.
No.
President Ward.
No.
President Wardlow.
On a 7-13 vote, Representative Erickson, A-62 is not adopted.
Now, Representative
Hi, Griffin? Yes, I'm in consultation with Chair Growley, and I'd like to move A61. I think we got it figured out. I was supposed to offer an oral amendment that's on a different amendment that's someplace in my pile of papers, and I had to read the amendment given to me today, and there was one given to me earlier, but I would like to make an oral amendment to A61, if I can move A61 first.
Representative Hygerkin moves adoption of A61.
Okay, I'd like to make an oral amendment to line 1.3, page 85, deletes 5 to 12. And I think
could
we have
it. Go a little bit slower, please.
So that line 1.3 on that A61 amendment, it should read delete lines 5 to 11. It says it should be 5 to 12. I think we would have it right order then, Representative Grady, right?
Representative Grady.
Madam Chair, Representative Hygerkin, yes, this is the amendment then that Representative Dabney and I and okay. Representative Hygerkin all supported. I thought that error in the drafting that somehow there was another motive afoot, but now we're back on path, and this is an amendment that we all should support, I think.
So marketing isn't there.
I read your bill. Right now.
Okay.
A little amendment. This is the amendment to your bill.
Any other discussion? All in favor of a Hygerkin oral amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, all in favor of A61 as amended, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion is adopted. You worked hard, Representative Hyder. Again, you had success today. Representative Ward, HRD.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move amendment 63. This amendment allows, as we have moved back. Along with the fired amendment, I thank you for your patience on this. The amendment allows local school districts to adopt either the state or national FIAD standards, and then it puts both sets of standards in rule. And that, why we've done this is because as we've moved forward with the PE bill, we've noticed that there's been school districts that have already met them, so we don't want to penalize them. So it's pretty straightforward, and Lisa Larson is also available for comment. Thank you.
Madam Chair. Oh. Okay.
Representative Ward moves adoption of A63. Representative
Piker. Yeah, just a little bit of a discussion. No, Representative Ward, I thank you for, we've done some compromise in this amendment earlier, and I think everything is up. Nothing, okay. I just want to make sure, no major changes, all right.
Representative
Kemmer. Madam Chair, I guess I'm not going to talk about the merits of the amendment, Madam Chair. This amendment came in this afternoon almost 1 o'clock. We had a 5 o'clock deadline last night for our amendments, Madam Chair. Is that going to be an issue?
Oh, do you want us to amend the one that came in at 5 o'clock last night with the ward's name on it?
What?
There was an A39, and this substitute for that. He pulled the A39. He's been working on proper language. He's had about 4 revisions during the day, but he still had the original.
Is it essentially the same amendment then?
Yes.
I'm okay with that.
It's the same topic. No, not the same amendment, but it's the same topic. But we could go back to that, the one that was handed in at 5 o'clock last night, and remove that and insert this language into that number if you want.
Madam Chair, I don't think that's, if there was an amendment here, I think we're fine. I'm a bit of a process wonk, Madam Chair, and my concern was that going forward, either one of us could have had members coming in, say, tomorrow, and say, well, last night you did this. But we have a reason for that, and I understand it, and I think I'm fine with that, Madam Chair.
No. In fact, I told someone at 11 o'clock today. Absolutely not. And it was... It was an individual we both know. Representative Darling, do you have any comments to make on A63?
Madam Chair, I have barely gotten the copy of it. I had it earlier, and I it might still need some more work, but I know that Representative Ward has been working on it very hard, and I think it's something we can work with as we go forward.
Representative Mariani, anything to add?
No, ma'am.
Any further discussion? All in favor of adopting A63, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion is adopted. Seeing no other amendments. Representative Erickson.
Madam Chair, would you be willing to accept a short oral amendment to another section of the bill?
What's the topic?
The topic is sex ed.
Go for it, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like all of us to turn to page 52 of the bill. And on line 10, I just think it's important that we clarify the Human Rights Act, Chapter 363A, section that's being referred in line 52.10. So I would like to insert before the period, that would be at the end of that line, or violate chapter 363A.27. Again, members, that is insert in front of the period or violate chapter 363A.27.
36A?
Oh, Madam Chair, Council would offer something that's even fewer words than that.
Oh.
But I do want to violate.
Council Larson.
No, Madam Chair, my words are fine, I think, right?
Section.
Oh, okay.
Section 368.
Madam Chair, Council will.
Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, as I understand your amendment on page 52, line 10, before the period insert, or violate section 363A.27.
Thank you. Yes.
And Ms. Larson, could you help us with, I can't remember what's in section 363A.27.
Madam Chair, I have it in front of me. This is the Carly Weaver proviso that was added to the section of law in 1993 when it passed. And it's under construction of law. And it reads, nothing in this chapter shall be construed to mean the state of Minnesota condones homosexuality or bisexuality or any equivalent lifestyle.
Oh, I think that one.
And so on.
I think that one should have been in at 5 o'clock yesterday.
Madam Chair, whatever you wish, I can offer it at another time.
I appreciate that, Representative Erickson. I would think we should see that one in writing. Is there any committee discussion about this bill? At this time. If not, Commissioner Segrin, I renew my invitation to you to come and speak on the bill if you wish. It has been amended a little bit, but basically it's a good bill that meets all the goals that Representative Mariani and Representative Greiling set forth in January. If you wish to come and address the bill and the committee, we welcome you.
Thank you.
Welcome, Commissioner.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. It is nice to be able to come up and comment on some parts of the bill. We do really appreciate working with Representative Growling and Representative Mariani through the process, and all of you this session. In fact, it's been delightful getting to know some of the new legislators, two that are on the committee, and hopefully we have formed some friendships that I think will be really positive in the future. Also, I do want to just thank Representative Murphy, too, for her kindness in letting me testify before. And just make a few comments. There are some nice things in the bill that we do like. Certainly, we appreciate the support for the governor's advanced placement international baccalaureate monies. We really do think that that's going to be an important continuation of what we're trying to do to raise the rigor in our school districts. We really appreciate the support that looking at the extended time learning addition that the governor had proposed. We think that that's really good. We appreciate putting money on the formula, and we appreciate looking at the special ed issue. The governor, as you know, last session, our last biennium, had proposed a 4% increase on the special ed formula. That was not passed, but we're glad to see that there is some movement in the special education area, too. There are some interesting things in the bill and some things that we're not real excited about. Of course, the one that I just testified on, we think is not the appropriate amendment to move forward with, but we respect the decision by the committee and respect the process as it goes forward, and we're looking forward to working with all of you in a really positive manner throughout this legislative session. And again, we really appreciate Representative Growling and Representative Mariani's leadership, and we'll just now wait for the process to go forward. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Commissioner, and thank you for the people that you have working with you, and indeed, this year it was a real pleasure for us to work with your department, and it made some things a lot easier. Representative Mariani, would you like to make any ending remarks?
Madam Chair, members, thank you. I'll be very brief. This is a really good bill. It's got, I think, terrific policy in it that really attempts to, to set a path for us to have our schools and our students really reach new levels of rigor. Plenty of ways in this bill to engage communities and parents in that process. There is a good amount of time and investment in raising the quality, helping to raise the quality of our teachers, their professional skills. We know that in the end, education is really a very human interaction. It's basically two human beings connecting with one another, one guiding the other to unlock, the curiosity, the inquisitiveness, the desire to understand the reality of themselves. And I think that when you add up all the different pieces in this bill, it really honors that concept of a very human, one of the most basic of human interactions, which is guiding our young to acquire knowledge. So I'm really proud to be associated with this bill. We worked awfully hard to be very inclusive of both parties, of different ideas. We didn't get all the ideas that were out there into this bill, but we sure got a good number of them that I think in the end is going to reflect really strong Minnesota values in terms of how we the expectations that we have of this system, of this public education system, and of our young people. So I would urge your support, and appreciate the opportunity this afternoon to go through the bill with you.
Representative Riley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Mariani said it very well, so I'm not going to add a lot other than to say that I am going to predict that when we get this bill passed today, we will have a very good vote, just like we did in education finance. I'm so very pleased that Commissioner Segrin and also the governor support the highlights in this bill, and we will, I think, go forward with a very strong effort for the students all around the state of Minnesota with this fair and balanced bill. And it's the first omnibus bill I have ever had a chance to chief author, and I am very proud of this bill and all the work of all the members of the legislature who have contributed to it. So I look forward to your support, and hopefully we can bring it all to fruition before the end of May. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I am the longest-serving Republican here, but I don't speak for my colleagues. I speak only for myself. I would really like to vote for this bill, but I can't because it is premised on tax increases, and the governor has said he will not support tax increases. And I know how hard I've worked on this bill, as you know, mostly amendments, but nevertheless, you know, there are many good parts in this bill, and I wish I could support it. But I have to say publicly that we could have done this using the surplus. We have a surplus. And, you know, to inflict a tax increase on folks, especially when we're facing a new category of taxation, you know, to tax the rich more, to redistribute to everyone else, is just not an idea founded within the Constitution of this Republic or the state of Minnesota. So with that, Madam Chair, I will not be supporting this.
Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to comment on the bill. I think there are some good things in here. I know there's, I think the provision for the alternative calendar is very good. Quite frankly, I would like to have seen a couple other reform things. I like the eighth grade plan thing and, you know, the rigors, some of the 3-hour stuff. And I realize we can't do everything. I think the process has been good. It's been respectful. Madam Chair, Representative Greiling, Chair Greiling and Jim Mariani have been good to listen to all of our concerns. We've had a chance to vet the things that we want to say. And you, Madam Chair, have too. I respect that and thank you for the opportunities. I can't say I'm totally thrilled with everything in here. As we've done by amendments, we've had a chance to speak, and we appreciate that. Process is good, just like we were yesterday, and I'm sure we will tomorrow. So I just wanted to say that. Just a comment on the funding part of it. Yes, there are dollars here. I'm going to go ahead and support this bill, but I believe that we can fund this without the tax increases, Representative Erickson, that's what I'm hoping for. The majority will find a way, I'm sure, to get education funded properly and figure out which, working with the governor and with the Republicans, how we can do this, maybe without the kind of income tax increases being talked about. It's going to have to be some give someplace. I just assume it would be someplace other than education, but that's just my opinion. So, Madam Chair, I will be supporting it, and hopefully as we go through the process, maybe a couple more chances for a few tweaks here and there. So thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chair Greiling and Chair Mariani, too.
You're welcome. Representative Heiberkin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's been a pleasure working with you, and it's been a pleasure serving as lead and serving with you, Representative Greiling, on a good bill. And I think your door has always been open, and I appreciate that. We've had a lot of discussions over the bill, and I think we've got something good going forth. And one thing that has not been brought forth is that equalization piece in here, and I think that's very important also. So it does have a little bit of a real flavor there that I like. And there's a few inequities, but I was not happy the last couple of years with the same inequity. So I'm just saying it's I'm constant at least, but it's good boy I'm voting for it. Thank you.
Representative Krenz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think all the closing remarks are very eloquent, but for the sake of time, I'll just ask for a roll call, and we can just let our votes do the speaking for us.
Any further discussion? Representative Wardlow.
Madam Chair, I didn't have the opportunity to be on the K-12 Finance Committee. They won't let me on that anymore, I guess. But I'm a glasses half full guy, and I'm worried about the tax possibility because I don't like that part. I think we can fund it some other way, but there's too much good in this bill not to let it go forward and see if we can't come to some sort of compromise later in Commerce Committee and out of that, maybe with the governor as well. So I'll support the bill, and besides, I'm a teacher, how would I not, I guess. So.
Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Greiling.
Yes.
Representative Mariani.
Yes.
Representative Peterson.
Yes.
Representative Slawick.
Yes.
Representative Rukavina.
Yes.
Representative Murphy.
Yes.
Representative Demmer.
Yes.
Representative Ehlers. Not here. Representative Brown.
Yes.
Representative Bunn.
Yes.
Representative Eastland.
Yes.
Representative Erickson.
No.
Representative Garofalo. Yes. Representative Hamilton. Representative Heidker.
Yes.
Representative Hornstein.
Yes.
Representative Kranz.
Yes.
Representative Mason.
Yes.
Representative Pelosi.
Yes.
Representative Ruth.
Yes.
Representative Rude.
Yes.
Representative Tillery.
Yes.
Representative Ward.
Yes.
Representative Wardlow.
Yes.
Representative Mariani, Representative Greiling, House File 6 passes 21-7.
No.
Oh, 21.
There was only one
vote. This is a 21. 21-1. Congratulations.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam.
The children of Minnesota and the families of Minnesota will be served well as it gets there. Members of the committee, don't run. Representative Demmer, thank you for your help as lead Republican. Representative Peterson, thank you for your help as vice chair and carrying out everything that I told you to do. And inputting, even the night that you wanted to go home early. When I had to learn more about K-12. But Representative Rukavina, we're having your presentation tomorrow, and the bill that we'll be working off of has been distributed, so you can prepare your amendments and get them in tonight, everyone. And Representative Rukavina, the bills that you've been waiting to be sent to you by memo will be sent to you by memo tonight.
Did you get instruction?
The determination has been made. Is there any other business today? If not, we'll see you at 12:30 tomorrow, and we're going straight through until we finish.
Madam Chair.
No, I think in the basement.
Oh, thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Ruth.
Thank you.
Nine. Okay.
In room 11.
This meeting is adjourned.